Today is September 8th, and I am here at the Ford Foundation in Rio de Janeiro with its representative, Ms. Ana Toni. Thank you so much for meeting with me. I'd love to start by getting an idea of some of the programs that the Ford Foundation is involved with here, and maybe get some of your perspective. I understand you've been working here since 2003, is that right?
I personally have been working here since 2003. Ford Foundation has been in Brazil for almost 50 years now. So it's a long story of Ford, but my story in Ford is just 7 years or 8 years now.
Okay. Maybe you could talk a little bit about some of the work that you've been doing here and some of the programs. And I'm specifically interested in the relationship between the state and the Ford Foundation and some of the state's programs and how the Ford Foundation sort of has involved itself in some of these projects.
Okay. I think it's important just for me to go back a little bit
sure,
to tell
please.
A little bit about the history
that
of Ford
great.
In Brazil. Ford enters Brazil in 62.
Okay.
And obviously, as soon as we get into Brazil, there was a dictatorship. So at that time, as you can imagine, the role of Ford was not to work directly with the government, which was hard at that time. So the role of Ford was getting specifically scholars to be able to carry on doing the work on governance issues and the social science area. And many of them, Ford helped to go outside Brazil, getting scholarships in the US or France or Chile or somewhere. So we call that time the time of struggling against the dictatorship. And I think Ford has been fundamental to keep some of the of those voices alive so that in the next period, which was more the democratization period, those voices could be brought back to Brazil and strengthened by not only then universities, but civil society. Then the role of Ford at that moment was very much of helping this embryon of civil society to be strengthened in Brazil, which was not the case in the beginning of 70s and 80s, and help those voices to be part of the new constitutional building that we had. The new constitution in Brazil was 88. And Ford was very much helping some voices, some of the democratic voices and specific marginalized people to have a say. So women's groups, the Afro-Brazilian groups, now groups working on decentralization of government policies, working on budgetary issues, participatory budgeting, those people to have a voice in the constitution. After that happened, then we had one of the best constitutions in Brazil. Ford, I think, was helpful in making sure that participatory democracy was not just a nice word that we had on the constitution, but those forums of participation were useful. So Ford spent a tremendous amount of money helping the councils, the conselhos, municipal councils in particular, to work well. So its functioning, who participates on those forums, as you probably know, those municipal councils are both for education or health or God knows what, but they have the state, civil society, and the private sector. So we helped somehow more the civil society to have capacity to function well within that forum and helping to strengthen those forums, which was, you know, the participatory budgeting was very much part of that. And that happens until, I would say, beginning of the years 2000. And it was absolutely establishing in Brazil those participatory forums that we have. And we, you know, in Brazil we have forums for everything. We have Congress for everything. We have big conferences, national conference. And we always support those participatory forums. But I think in the last period, specifically from 2003 onwards, that's more the period that I've been involved, our key motto that has been guiding us is implementation of laws and policies. Brazil is a country that has wonderful laws and policies, but very difficult to implement many of them, you know, to get out of the constitution, to be implemented on the ground so that, you know, poor and marginalized have a benefit of the democracy that they fought for. So that has been the motto that we have been fostering. And in that, first, to make governments accountable is obviously a big theme for all of us, monitoring government budget, state, national, municipal. It's a big key issue for us, looking at specific policies and try to follow, depending on the interest that we have at the moment, on why that policy has been implemented and how is that being implemented, has been guiding our work. And at the moment we have four big programs. One is in relation to racial and ethical discrimination. So we look at policies that are supposed to be supporting Afro-Brazilians or could support Afro-Brazilians and indigenous and are not, and why not, and strengthen those voices. Second is human rights and the justice sector. So we'll be monitoring now the justice sector in terms of access as well as its transparency. As you know, the justice sector is a key sector for the functioning of country. And within that, we have public security, and we can spend some more time on that later on. The third program is democratization of the media. Why democratization of the media? It's because many laws and policies are not implemented because it's just not on the public agenda. And we have realized if the media doesn't make them, doesn't highlight them, they don't monitor them, it's impossible to be in the public agenda. So we put some of our resources into that. And the fourth area is land and natural resources, in particular in the Amazon. Again, making sure that the constitution's rights of traditional people, indigenous people, ribeirinhos or quilombolas in relation to land is implemented. So that's what we've been doing in the last few years.
Okay, and specifically for Rio de Janeiro, for the city, there are lots of different government initiatives. The new one, the most recent one, is the UPP program. How has the Ford Foundation positioned itself in relation to Governor Cabral's initiatives?
Yeah. Again, Ford didn't have an emphasis on a specific territory or
right. City.
So we don't focus Rio de Janeiro, although we have an office here, we don't focus on Rio de Janeiro. We now have a focus, a geographic focus, but that's the Amazon. Obviously, we have many grants as well in Rio. And the majority of the grants in Rio de Janeiro have to do with the human rights area and the issue of public security. So in that respect, we obviously very monitoring what happens on UPPs very closely. So from the human rights perspective, we always worked with people whose rights have been violated, specifically people living in the favelas, marginalized people, and Afro-Brazilians, which normally are the ones that have been killed. So we have several projects, both to help kids to get out of the traffic, like supporting Afro-Hegi or Kufa, as well as monitoring and helping communities, the mothers of kids that has been killed. So we help those associations of mothers to speak up, to start legal cases against the state, and to monitor which is actually doing. And then on the other hand, we have groups like Sezeki, which you probably came across, or Viva Rio, that works with the police as well as with the human rights groups. So we always try to look at the police angle as well as academics and the human rights groups. So we feel that our role is very much putting those three groups of people together to bring solutions to a bigger problem, which is Rio de Janeiro in terms of its violence and criminality. And I think somehow the fruits of what Ford has been doing for the last 20 years, the UPPs, it's a little symbol of that, because UPPs brings together, obviously, was the big change, which is the government deciding that, you know, just coming into a favela and, you know, showing strength through its police force was not the solution. That it needs to sit with the community as well as with the academia to think about solutions. So Rio de Janeiro has been very hard for us because before we did not have access for our grantees even to do research about what was going on the police. Now very recently now with the OPP, as we have been seeing an openness from the government to give the data that academics need to reflect of what's going on. Obviously, having the groups on the ground that have more access to those places, again, either to do social work or to do research. So I think the OPP brings together the aspect which it was, brings intelligence rather than just force. And I think the intelligence desires and is absolutely needed. People that hears not only good arguments and what the academia has to say in the data, but hears what the communities there have there to say. And I think many of the grantees that we work with has always pledged that kind of community police, mm-hmm. as we calling out also the OPPs. But I think OPPs have gone beyond community policing. And that's why I think the novelty of OPPs is going just beyond just normal community policing. And that's why we are very hopeful that this project from the government will succeed. We'll have to wait and see how sustainable it is. But I think it has the right ingredients to make sure that it will work.
In what ways specifically has it gone beyond the community? What was community policing like before the OPPs and now?
I think the difference is, there are two main differences. One, which Beltrami and his group, I think, triggered and was, I think, the magic of OPPs, was community policing in many cases would go in, would stay, as OPPs do. Obviously, the OPPs more than the normal community policing stays to a huge extent. I mean, they have 300, 200 policemen inside of a favela. But more than staying, it's as if the government has realized the limits of a policeman's duty. In many other community policing that I know, the police becomes the center for social policies as well, for resolving all the problems of a community, education, health. And I think very cleverly, Beltrami realized that police must do the work of a police and it should act together with other parts of the government to deliver the other necessary public policies that's needed in those areas. So working with obviously the Secretaria de Ação Social or Education or Health and other groups to bring that. So somehow he did not try to make the police person just the key person to resolve all the public policy issues in that community, because the problems in those communities go much beyond just security. Obviously security is the first step, but doesn't stop there. So I think this extra ingredient was to have realized the necessity of bringing the entire government to those territories rather than just the community policing, which was an obvious and absolutely necessary.
This coordination aspect between different aspects of government is something that we see in a lot of different places where we work. I'm interested in a lot of people have told me that the stars have aligned, it seems, politically, different levels of government, yeah, and with the private sector as well, and the pressure. I'm interested in your perspective on why it is that it seems to be successful now in its early stages here, whereas in the past, why that coordination didn't happen in the past?
It's hard to know. I think there's a lot of, the stars align itself. It's a lot of luck. There's a political momentum. There is some leadership, specific leadership. But above all, I think there is an assessment that was not working before. We needed to do something different. There is the Olympics, there is football coming. Rio had to solve the problems of violence. Now the favelas stays in the middle, in the heart of the city. So for the government, it's not very good. If the favelas carry on being so violent, that violence comes, the insecurity comes to the rest of the city. So I think it was a necessity. So political will didn't come just from the gods. It came because of a specific necessity of government needing to show they had the city in control. And I will emphasize the word some parts of the city, because that's one of the criticisms that we don't know. I mean, hopefully UPP will be so successful that we can, you know, that its success can expand to other areas. But at the moment, it's 10 territories, mm-hmm. key territories, obviously involve lots of people, but how that spread out to the rest of the police and to the rest of the communities, we yet don't know. I'm not saying that it's not valid just because we don't know, it's just saying it's a first step
right. In
a bigger direction. But that first step came, I think, because of the necessity that's needed to happen. Secondly, because it was obvious that the other ways that they thought to be able to solve criminality within the city was not working. There was an alignment of federal, state, and municipal level governments. Some key people that had integration of policy as a goal, per se, and knowing, you know, or wanting to experiment this as a solution. And again, I think it's early stage to know if it will work and how sustainable that is. But it's obvious that for any government body now, education, health, to have their projects in those territories to work is for them a priority because they have a lot of visibility. So if the Secretary of Education or Health is going to make a school or health center to work, you can make sure that they will make the health center that's in the UPP to work, because if it doesn't work, we'll have a lot of visibility. And if it works, we'll also have visibility. So it brought a lot of the visibility also needed that really helps on the integration bit.
So as the Ford Foundation, I mean, you mentioned this is a very targeted program currently, the 10 or so favelas that have been pacified so far. What kinds of criteria shape your decisions, looking at the fact that there are, you know, some 1,100 favelas in the greater Rio area, and there's only, you know, a few ones here in the center in Zona Sul that are being targeted? What criteria shape your decisions on where to move forward first and how to support?
I mean, first of all, we don't support, I mean, any work related to specific UPPs.
Right, okay.
This is not what Ford is being doing.
Right.
So, and we will not, actually, there is one proposal that just came to us related to that. But what we are much more interested in is to learn from this experience, to ensure that we support researchers to learn from this experience, so that we can see if this policy could be adapted to other regions or not. So, for example, we support the National Forum on Public Security, the Brazilian Forum on Public Security. So we are instigating our partner there to think about comparative researches of community policing in different states of Brazil. So UPP in Rio versus Fica Vivo in Minas Gerais versus Jardim Ângela in São Paulo. They're all different types of community policing. So if we were to do comparative research to see is the one in Rio more successful, less successful than the other, what can we learn from each other there? This is the type of work that Ford would fund, rather than, you know, a project in Providência versus a project in Cidade de Deus. Or, you know, we don't work. So in that respect, okay. We don't have to worry about which favelas to work. Another thing that we just been thinking, and Sezeki, our partner, is doing a very interesting research about this: the policemen that are involved in UPPs, what do they think about the UPPs? How for them in their career as policemen, being a UPP police, is that good or bad? Why is that good and why is that bad? So they're doing this research by themselves, but they have approached us with the possibility of interviewing policemen outside UPPs, the broader police. What do they think about community policing and UPP in particular? Because obviously our goal is that the entire police force will be less violent, will talk to the community, not only the UPPs one. So our work's not devoted to UPPs, but using UPP for learning and obviously reflection on how to improve public policy in security areas.
I'm interested in this last point that you mentioned, particularly the reform of the police and the security sector as a whole. As I know that while the UPP program, you know, has recruited new recruits to be members, there's a very large part of the military police specifically
outside.
That is outside. So how, you know, since 2003, since you've been working here, how have things changed in that period of time, and what are the issues that are still challenging as far as the big picture issues?
I think a lot has changed. Really, really a lot. I mean, the public security program in Ford started probably about 15 years ago with Elizabeth Leeds, a program officer here. And since the time we started this issue, public security was an issue that the academics and the progressive academics and progressive policymakers didn't want to touch. Because with the rescue from the military dictatorship, so security, public security, was like the military. It's the military police, as we call them in Brazil. Yeah, the police is military police. So there was always a rejection from the more progressive policymakers that this issue was not an issue that to deal with. And I think this has gone. Now the issue of public security is an issue for progressive civil society groups, is an issue for progressive academics, for progressive policymakers, governors, mayors, is an issue that we all concern, because I think finally people realize that there is no good democracy without a good police force. So I think what has changed tremendously is, first, the understanding that it's absolutely not only compatible, but necessarily, if we are building democracies, that governments, progressive governments, look at public security as an area to influence and to progress. Secondly, we have much more qualified people. Because this was an issue just for the military, you wouldn't find anthropologists, social scientists, sociologists, economists looking into public security as an issue for them to deal. They were totally outside the universities. Now you have very strong centers like in Minas Gerais or here in Rio de Janeiro or in Rio Grande do Sul, which public security is an issue, is a discipline given for economists, for anthropologists. So that, again, the qualification of the debate has changed tremendously. And I think finally, what has changed in terms of the field is civil society has also realized that it cannot just be against everything, which used to be the case, because, again, as a reaction to the military dictatorship, but civil society are bringing solutions to the table as well, both at the community level, with like Afroregi doing very positive work, or Kufa doing very positive work, but also being able to keep their independence and being critical when necessary. So I think all the three actors, government officials, academia, civil society, and the police, which is also much more qualified, they all changed. And that has changed the way we looked into public security. And I think it shows a little bit on the last few years, the decrease of criminality by the police and by criminals themselves is slightly diminishing in some states versus another. So in Minas Gerais, there is some positive outcome. In São Paulo, there's positive outcomes. And we start seeing that in Rio, in the UPPs. There's much less killings in those favelas. So still an extremely serious problem in Brazil, criminality. But I think nowadays people realize it's not the problem of somebody else. It's ours, and we need to deal with that.
Could you maybe speak to a little bit some examples of some of the projects that you're supporting that might be relevant?
There are many, but one that I think gives a good example of what we do, which is the Brazil Forum on Public Security. That was a program that started from scratch. There was no forum. And that forum has as objective to bring the police, academics, and civil society leaders to the same table to discuss and to prioritize issues of concern in public security area. This is a 5 years old program, as I said, started from nothing, And in the last 2 or 3 years, they have a national meeting that brings together more than 1,000 people, which shows that, you know, with little seed money from Ford to bring that idea, you are able now to mobilize a much bigger budget than we can afford, but you brought to the table, you know, people that before would never sit together. That's one example. I think it really speaks to some of the issues that Ford really care about, which is bringing people together to talk. The other thing that we really care about is qualifying the debate rather than having just ideological discussions about this or that. And so research in the field of public security has been a big area for us. And more than the research itself, the players of doing research, how you do research in this area. So Ford has been, I think, very important to make some of the players that we have now in Brazil as the key experts in public security, to get their centers of knowledge inside of most of them university to be brought. So CRISP, for example, is something that Ford has supported for years. And rather than knowing CRISP is the Center for Research and Criminology in the University of Minas Gerais, rather than knowing exactly which research they are doing, what we wanted is to have quantitative as well as qualitative research being done in this area. So now we have one of the best players in that. So qualifying the debate, creating players that speak with some empirical work, and bringing people to the table, I think that has been the emphasis of Ford's work. And as we work both on the human rights area and on the police area, gives us some possibilities of bringing very antagonist groups together, which I think has been a privilege in working in this area. Because, yeah, if you work just with the police with the government, you may have a biased relationship to the issue. If you work just with the human rights groups, you also have that. So being able to see and bring together those both players has been the type of work that Ford has done. And now we need to decide as Ford what is next for us in the area of public security. And we are just on the moment of reflecting which new areas, because now we have the qualified people, I mean, the government's on board. So which is the contribution that Ford can play in the future? We actually just at this moment reflect on that.
And what are some of the, reflections just broadly?
I mean, as I said, if we follow the issue of implementation of law, we haven't decided, but one of the areas that we're looking is the pre-trial imprisonment. I mean, as you know, in Brazil, some people can stay without a trial for many, many years in prison. And so this is a big, big issue that obviously we are concerned. So maybe we will pick up some of those bottlenecks in the system. The other big issue is the relationship between the police and the justice sector, because one of the big claims that the justice sector, the police, gets the people to be put in jail, and the justice sector allow them to go free. So impunity is a big problem for both sides. So that relationship between the police force and the justice sector is something that we feel that's absolutely vital. The whole issue of prisons in Brazil is catastrophic. So it may be that we'll look just prison, as I say. But as I said, it's early stage for us to reflect on that.
Great. One of the other issues that I'm interested in is the involving local leaders and local associations in some of these communities. In your experience, what are some of the characteristics of the interaction between the government and civil society with some of these local leaders? And I know it's particularly difficult, given some of the conditions of some of these communities, to find partners that can be worked with. Just from your personal perspective.
I mean, not only from my personal perspective. Have you interviewed Afroregi or Kufano?
No, not yet. No.
That would be really worthwhile if interviewing them, because these are two groups that work directly in the community, and many of their members have been killed by the police, so brothers, sisters. And one of the projects that I just want to mention that we supported was getting Afro-Hegi, which is a percussionary group, to give lessons for the police on how to approach young Afro-Brazilian boys, but through culture, through art. So we got Afro-Hegi, and unfortunately they are a group from Rio, but at the beginning they were not able to work with the Rio police. So they start this project with the Minas Gerais police from the Minas Gerais. And there was a wonderful project about the police and Afro-Hegi doing music together. So breaking the barriers and prejudices from both sides through culture first. They were playing and putting the young boys from the favela to first look at those police people not just as a force that kills, you know, their community, but as individuals, like, you know, people behind the uniforms. And getting the police also to look at those boys not all as marginals as they normally do, but looking at them as the value they had through culture. It was a wonderful project. We have a huge repercussion in Brazil. They made a band of police and, you know, those young people from the favela, and they played on television and so on and so forth. And obviously the outcomes of that has been how much prejudice was there from both sides. And that methodology of using culture as an intermediate between the police and the specifically young groups in favelas has been throughout Brazil being used. Kufa here uses and has been tremendously helpful, either with how do you call those painting on the wall, graffiti.
Yes.
Either graffiti or theater or doing films together or dance or repercussion. So that and those leaders in the favela who had the courage to take those projects forward, because it's not easy for them, you know, and they are seen as they were seen at the beginning as, you know, traitors to sit with the police, let alone doing a project with the police. It took a long time, and to break the prejudice within the police force as well. So I think there are many nowadays examples of projects, and we found a few of them here in Pará, that tries to break this barrier of no dialogue. And those community leaders have been visionaries in making sure that this could happen. And I really praise them for their courage, because it was hard, very, very hard.
What year did the Afro-Hegi program? What year did the Afro-Hegi program?
The year?
Yes.
Was, let me see, 2004 okay. to 2007.
Okay.
Yeah. And now they're doing in Rio.
Okay.
Not with money from Ford, but with money from the government itself. So it's a methodology that they use and reproduce time and time again.
Okay, great, yeah. So I guess I know you have limited time, so I won't take up too much of it. I'm interested that some of the programs that are going on right now with the government have this initial phase, which is, you know, pacification is what they're calling it. Then there's this occupation phase, and then now there seems to be more effort, particularly in a couple of these favelas, to provide the services that come next. Just given your expertise in these areas, I was wondering sort of some of your perspective on what's different now, or is there anything different now versus some of the efforts in the past? Because I know some of the policing efforts in the past, as you had mentioned, the police were sort of the actor. You know, how is this greater coordination between ministries? What is the result of some of that better coordination?
I think this is a big innovation, and we will have to wait and see how successful those projects are. I think, as I said, it's early stage. I think they have done a tremendous good work in terms of the planning side and involving different actors, both within the government as well as private sector and civil society. There's goodwill from all sides. I think what the challenge at the moment is to sustain those policies first. I think that would be the biggest challenge, is how you sustain coordination And the way it's being sustained at the moment is obviously everybody's so excited about peace in Rio, is a novelty. So how do you sustain that? And at the moment you have a very direct command. The governor and the mayor have said, okay, who's going to coordinate is the Secretaria of Ação Social. If you take that actor, I mean, how that actor, should that actor maintain that leadership? Which leadership is that after those favelas have gone to, say, a normal stage of they're as good or as bad shape as the rest of the city or the rest of the state? Which type of coordination is needed in that territory? We don't know as yet. I mean, many people have probably already told you those territories are not the most poor territories. They are the most violent territories, but they're not the most poor. So if we put them in the same playing field as everybody else, how do we ensure that criminality will not come back? And how do we ensure that public policies will flow into those areas in the same way that flows in any other area, which is not the case at the moment? It's sustainability and consolidation of this project, I think, is the key question mark. And I think they are thinking about this, but that, I mean, again, will depend on how political will all those stars. At one time, all those stars are not going to be aligned.
Right.
No, Olympics will go on and the football will go on. Maybe at that time, we wouldn't need that coordination anymore. Maybe we will need. We don't know. But I think it was an important step to risk without too much planning. I think if we were to plan this, it wouldn't have happened. Because nobody would ever dream that all those parts of this puzzle would be in place at this moment. Nobody knew, nobody could predict it. They were, and people made good use of them. But at the moment, now we're in a different phase. Now we can plan things. So I think that planning and also leaving space for no planning, I think, will carry on being important, because it was the no plan that also helped. And one thing that I just want to mention, the people involved leading this process, both on the police force, which I know less, but on the social area, there have been people concerned about this for many years. They were outside the government, but they had those concerns for many, many years. Now they're having the opportunity to put in practice with the machine of the government some of their theories. I mean, to have those people been thinking about those things before was key. Mm-hmm. And it may be where Ford has contributed most, which is to support these people, you know, prior to, because obviously being in the government, they have enough resources now to do whatever they want much more than we have. So I think in terms of ensuring that public policies work, you have to have had people thinking about those things. It's not just goodwill, it's not just political will. You have to have had time and the resources, the human resources there. And again, now aligned, we had them. And they're all here now. And they putting in practice what things that they learned, that they wanted to implement. They have a great chance to do that now, but sustainability, time will tell us.
A challenge for a lot of countries is, you know, if you have that body of knowledge with these human resources, how to actually get them into a position of power where they're able to start working on these programs. Can you talk maybe a little bit about how that actually happened here? I mean, it seems that that this is a moment right now where you have a lot of really incredibly well-trained professionals in various different sectors all working together. But how exactly was the government able to pool these resources together?
Again, I mean, and obviously I'm a bit biased talking on those issues, but I think independently of the area of the social area, I think what the government, specifically the government in Rio, realized in the area of security, that it could not make of some parts of the government a political gamble. So putting people with background in the area, technicians, know, people that, and that was the case of the Secretary of State on Security. He was not just a politician. He is not just a politician. He's somebody with a long experience in the area. Probably made lots of mistakes in his career, probably, you know, made many things right, but reflected about what's possible or not possible. So I think, it, at least in the area of security, was a big gamble from the government because of political necessity. Now, we cannot just give this important piece of our government to another party, just sharing power, as has always been the case, especially here in Rio de Janeiro, where, which you give higher up positions, not for what people knew, but how much political power they had. So that has changed. And I think the same happened on the area of social policies there, in which it's not a person that is a politician or somebody that comes from a political party. It's just, no, Ricardo is somebody that comes from the social field. So the choice of putting, so to say, two obviously politically savvy people, but not political professional people, but people that are professionals in their area of expertise, was a choice that the government realized it had to make. Because everything else that they have tried for the last, God knows, billion years has just not worked. So hopefully will be a sign for other governments, and I think at the federal government that that has happened as well, that we can just not give key positions for people with no experience in the areas that they were supposed to show command. So you have a huge number of very good, talented people in some, and this is a contradiction, because if you look at the entire federal, state, or local government, you see some areas that are with great people, expertise in those areas, and you will see lousy people that have no idea what the areas they're commanding. So I don't think that is well spread. I think at least in some areas there is pocket of expertise, and which is a very good sign. Hopefully that will now broaden itself, but that, I wouldn't say this is the rule as yet.
Okay.
I think these are exceptions rather than the rule, and the exception comes with need.
Okay, great. Just finally, what do you look for when you're looking at some of these programs that go on, given the history of some of these programs? What do you look for when you look for success? How there seems to be an electoral cycle here every 2 years that really causes the short term to be favored over the long term, and the political goals to be favored over sustainability. What do you look for when you're looking for what can actually be a successful, sustainable program?
I think that you just said the key. I don't look at programs.
Okay.
I look at players.
Okay.
So, because I think behind any program, you have to have the right players, again, with the same things that we just talked about, mm-hmm. expertise, social justice commitment. So our emphasis here at Ford is to ensure that the players will survive the different political waves that they come. So sometimes those important players, they'll be in government, and sometimes they will be opposition. But to keep the consistency of qualifying the debate, having social justice as a priority, that voice, that continuous voice, is what we aim at. Because as I said, I mean, there are political waves that we cannot control. I wish I could, but we definitely cannot control. But we can influence the voice, one specific voice of qualifying people and social justice. So if sometimes these people be called to play a bigger role, we applaud them and we'll support them. If sometimes they are the opposition, we'll keep applauding them and supporting them. So I think our role is definitely keeping that thread that is independent from the different political wills, if you desire, if so will. I mean, it really, we hope to influence the entire way Brazil does politics, but the only way we can, as a Ford, as a minimum, is just to show consistency. I think Brazil is so bad at consistency. We are so bad about, you know, keeping programs that are successful, keeping know, methodologies. So either inside or outside government, you just have to keep consistency. And I think, and learn, obviously. Not consistent doesn't mean being static. It means being reflecting what you do. So that's how we operate and judge success of the programs that we support.
Okay, great. Is there anything else that you think might be helpful to, you know, on reflection that I haven't covered that you think might be relevant?
One aspect that I'm not sure how it compares with other programs, but, and I will be keen to learn, so that's why I just posed the question here, is in Brazil, and this program in particular, the UPPs, but in general, the governments have a huge role to play. Society is led by the government. So as you said, if the government's good, it's good. If it's bad, it's bad. You know, it changed the entire mood of the country. And I'm very much in favor of strong governments. But I also feel that to understand the role that other players have to play in that process, in the case of UPPs, and that's why I'm very happy that, you know, private sector is also coming in and civil society is also coming in and the media should be coming in. But I don't think it depends just on the government. The government has the leadership and has to show, you know, direction. But sometimes I feel that if the government fails, everything else fails. And that's something I'm always concerned in Brazil, where leadership can come and scale can come and perpetuate governments from time to time, not to substitute them, but to work side by side with them. So that's more a question on, you know, at which point do you feel that Brazil has a more, we have a strong state, which is great, but what's the limit of that strong state in those areas, specifically social justice, and how do we make this as a culture for the entire country rather than just relying on one player to give the tone?
Right. Well, thank you so much for your time. I really appreciate it.
Thank you.